ready? Welcome to our very first podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Dee Dee.
And we are so excited that you're here with us today because this podcast has been a long time coming. We finally are here and it's day one and we are excited to have you here. So let's just kind of let you understand the backstory. Dee Dee, can you fill everybody in as to how this podcast even came to be?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a long time coming and I'm so excited that we're finally here, Kelly. Myself, and I know that you as well, get a lot of requests to talk about things with relating to real estate, Zoom calls, and especially during the time of COVID, we all know.
Yep.
We were pulled into Zoom calls and meetings, and I get many requests via Facebook and social media, emails, messages to speak on topics relating to real estate. And I thought, you know what? This would be a great idea is to put on a podcast and just give these little snippets each week. Kind of what's happening is what moved us to build our classes, and that's coming up soon, our courses. But the podcast will kind of give just a little overview and kind of get people talking about what's happening in real estate.
Right. I mean, I think I remember the day that we actually had the phone call and we were literally exhausted because both of us had had so many requests. COVID popped off and Zoomabalooza began. And yes. Everybody was asking, I mean, I was asked to even speak on subjects that I don't even know, like commercial real estate. Residential is my lane, but people were pulling me into commercial discussions.
Right.
And so you and I both stopped and said, you know what we need to do? A, we need to start a course to really kind of teach and share with everybody what we've learned throughout the, we won't say how long, many years that we've been in the real estate business so that nobody can figure out how old we actually are.
Right.
And that it made sense to kind of jump on and have a forum and platform where we can share our experiences. And I guess what we kind of want to let everybody know ahead of time is be ready because this is all about getting real. That's why it's called The Real Tea with Dee Dee and Kelly.
Absolutely. So, I mean, if you guys know us, you know that we keep it real anyway. So this is not those other podcasts. We're about to roll up our sleeves and get in with real talk. Okay. And we want you guys to have feedback. So you be sure to let us know. And if there's topics that you want us to cover and questions that you have, we're looking forward to interacting with everyone. So let's get started.
Yay, I'm excited. So we are going to talk today about how we both got started in this crazy biz of real estate. So Dee Dee, I'm going to ask you first, how did you get started in real estate?
Oh my goodness. So I'm that classic story that I kind of fell into real estate. As a matter of fact, I don't really know too many people, unless you were born into it or your parents and you just come from real estate legacy that just kind of set off for a career in real estate. So my career started out early in property management. I mean, that was my gig. That was my jam. And I got my real estate license because in the state of Michigan, you had to have a real estate license to sign leases. And so I wanted to move up in my career in property management and be able to handle this and not have to have a regional manager stop by once a week to sign leases. And that was really the first real estate license that I ever got years ago was in the course of doing property management.
So how long between the time you got it just to facilitate signatures in your management gig, did you then become actually a salesperson?
So I want to say that that was probably about 5 years because I continued with the property management work. My job then relocated me to Washington, D.C. in another capacity. And so once I got out into Washington, D.C., I got really serious about it. And I thought, you know what? I think I really want to grow this. And I started thinking about what I wanted in the future. And real estate became a huge part of how I was going to reach those goals. Mm-hmm. And so I want to say that's kind of what turned it for me. And it was probably about 5 years.
Okay. Because my story is very similar, same old classic, never intended to be a real estate agent when I grew up. I was on track to go to school or was going to school and thought I was going to be the big bad international attorney. So I had gone to school for a couple of years in Europe doing semester abroads, which turned into years abroads. And I came back going to NYU and my grandfather actually had a quadruple bypass back in the day. So I had gone to New Jersey to kind of help him recover and help my grandmother. And I was bored. So I was like, I need to get out of this house every once in a while. So I decided to get a job at Victoria's Secret, of all places.
Nice.
And it was great for the discounts, let me tell you. And so within a very short period of time, I was asked to be one of the managers of one of the stores. I did it, but, you know, again, thinking this is, I'm just doing this temporarily just to have something to do and to make some extra money. And I got to a point like a year in when I was trying to like still go to school, take all my classes at NYU in a single day, work the other 6 days of the week, that I thought, you know what, if I'm going to sell something, I'm going to sell something that I can make way more money doing so. Thinking it was easy peasy, I got my real estate license in New York, and that was going to be my side gig. Obviously, as we all know, it doesn't start out as easy as we think, but once it kind of took hold, because I had also taken a break from school because the lovely university tried to tell me that all of a sudden all my credits would not transfer and I would have to take an extra year at NYU to graduate. So I was like, hold up, let me just take a pause. I went to take a paralegal class, see if I really liked the law game. And in the meantime, this real estate career started to take off. And I had many thoughts over that period of time, like, okay, do I go back to school? Because I always thought that I would. I always thought I'm going to go back. I'm going to get my law degree. That's really what I'm going to do when I grow up. Mm-hmm. But this just became so profitable. And I thought, if I go back now, I'm going to start in a mailroom somewhere and have to work myself up and kill myself and do all those crazy hours that new lawyers do.
Right.
Whereas real estate allows me to make an unlimited amount of money. It's all on me. There's no ceiling. There's no cap. And why don't I just do it? Like, if I keep this going, it makes the most sense. And again, never anything I set out to do, but something I fell into and really saw overall opportunity there. Now, was it easy? Hell to the no, you know that. So, you know, we all come into this with big glassy eyes thinking, oh, so easy. I just do it. And then it's like you see on TV, ching, ching, ching.
Right.
But it's not.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, even at the time, so I always say that I had my real estate license a lot longer than I actually was in the real estate business. But when I did get serious and decide that it was going to actually be a viable business for me, you do have these preconceived ideas about how easy it's going to be. I mean, they make this look really, really easy on TV. I mean, they certainly make it look glamorous. You see all the good things and you see these billboards and
the cars and drivers and,
park benches and like fancy stuff. I'm like, wow, like they're really, you know, I'm a businesswoman always. So I'm like, okay, that looks like a really good avenue to take.
Yeah. Right. I think that's obviously something that we're going to have to discuss on a future podcast, like the reality of reality.
Right.
It doesn't look anything like those shows that we see on TV. Nope. So once you got started, what was some of the biggest challenges that, or roadblocks even, that you faced early on after getting started?
So after I got started and I got serious that I wanted to really make this a business, I had this like moment when I froze and I thought, oh my goodness, I'm just now getting started doing this. And there's been so many people who've been doing this for so long and the market is saturated. I mean, there's like real estate agents everywhere. Like, how am I going to make a difference? And how am I going to get a deal? And to make it worse, when I decided to start, I was going to start where I was at, right? So I'm going to start in my own little hometown that I was living in, which was a really kind of niche town and really cute. And everyone told me, don't even bother. There are two agents who have been working that territory for the last 20 years. Nobody has ever sold anything in that area but them. Wow. And I said, well, that's where I'm starting because that's where I am. I love it here. I know everything about it, you know, so that's where I'm going to start. So the challenge was to try to break into a market that was on lock essentially, right? And so I had to kind of come up with a plan. And my plan was, I knew that if I tried to go head to head with these agents who had been there forever, that was a losing fight. Like I could never, David and Goliath, I could never, you know, do that. So I had to come up with a plan about being different, something that was different. And that's what I did. I launched my entire career on something different. Like,
what was something different?
So with me, it was going to be that I was going to be ultra, ultra customer centric, right? And I was going to, sometimes when you've been in real estate for so long, And you can look around you and you can see this now. When people have had a measure and a degree of success, they get lazy, right? They have been making so much money for so long, it comes easy. It's almost on automatic mode, right? They no longer remember the essentials. They no longer have to work for it. Business just comes to them. And that's how they work. And it becomes that type of customer experience as well. And so I wanted to come in and I wanted to be extremely customer centric. And that's what I did. So I started a whole campaign around being different and about my customer experience. And that customer experience included, I was a stager. I was a certified stager. And so I would include staging at a time when it really wasn't that big. I would include staging in all of my listings. When I had open houses, they got famous. I would have people lined up around the block waiting to get into my open houses. It was amazing. I had catered. They were catered. I had people pouring drinks. Like it was a really big deal.
You basically presented an experience for people who are going to work with you.
Yes. I hired professional videographers. I mean, it was something that they hadn't seen before. Why? Because these agents were successful. They didn't have to do that stuff anymore. They didn't have to do that shit. They were just like getting money and getting listings. And that was that. And so here you have this person who was hungry. I was very hungry. And so I was acting like it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so next thing you know, I finally got a shot. You know, somebody gave me a listing and it went from there to the next door neighbors, to the next door neighbors, to the next door neighbors, then across the street to that neighbor. And there was a time when I had an entire block with the exception of one home that I had sold. And that one home was the mayor of the town and their home was listed with one of those agents.
Oh my goodness.
And it wasn't long before that house just sat on the market and they watched every other house on the block sell by me, mm-hmm. that all of a sudden I get this surprise call from the mayor that said, hey, our listing contract just ended. We want to talk to you about selling our home. It was the biggest highlight of my little newbie career that I had. And it was pretty cool. Yeah. And that just kind of launched.
I mean, that's an amazing way to think about it, because you're right. Agents who kind of have a lock on a certain neighborhood, building, mm-hmm. you know, depending on what your marketplace is, they really just assume the business is going to keep coming forever.
Right.
And it's not necessarily. And what I think is interesting is that you said that, you know, they were never going to kind of step aside, but in that, so you needed to kind of think of this differently, or that you couldn't really break into it right away. Mm-hmm. But if you had to go back and do it again, like, do you really think that you would take the same approach, or you would have a different mindset about the fact that, yes, you can knock these other people out of the box, you know, because I think that's important, that people back away from places where there's already a dominant agent.
Right, right. And it can be intimidating. Let's be clear. I mean, these were amazing agents, right? Amazing in the fact that they were very successful. They had been here for a long time. Their names were known, okay? I mean, even other brokerages told me in the area, we don't even market there. Now, isn't that interesting that somebody could have such a lock? They have such a market share that people are like, it's a waste of my money to even try to market in there.
Everybody else just conceded it to them.
Correct. They did.
It's that much easier for them to just have it and not need to worry about their customer experience.
Correct. And that's exactly what it was. So they didn't have to work for it. But what I knew is that if people had a choice, right, would they make the same if they had a choice of a different experience? And so I had to first paint what different was, right? And then make the offer. And once people start accepting that offer, it just fell like dominoes, right? Mm-hmm. I became one of the agents, one of those three agents that had the market share of that neighborhood. So very exciting. And I think that it can be done now. I mean, think about it, Kelly. When you think about mega agents, even in our own markets, right? The ones who, you know, everybody knows, they have the billboards, the signs, right. They have a team of 200, 300 agents, right? Like mega. When is the last time you think that they picked up the phone and called like a buyer and said,
wish them a happy anniversary, had a real heart-to-heart conversation with whomever they may have worked at. And I think that's one of the biggest problems negative thoughts in our industry, is that too many people look at this as a transaction industry and not a relationship industry. because right. it really is about relationships. And the better that you can build and maintain those relationships, the longer you're going to be successful in this business.
I mean, everybody who's ever taken a class from me or sat and heard me speak knows that that's where I come from. It's all about the relationship. It's mm-hmm. all about the relationship. I built an entire career on the fact that agents are transactional. Mm-hmm. I built my whole career on that. They would sell a home to someone or sell someone's home and never speak to them again. Take the money, take the commission, they're out the door, right? Yep. Never follow up, never do anything. Maybe send them a calendar at Christmas or something. I can't tell you how many homes I listed that had agent calendars on the refrigerator, right?
The magnets, so, the ever-present, all-important magnets that nobody gives a shit about and pretty right? much throws away. Money not spent well on behalf of our side of the biz. And I guess that's like, it's really kind of interesting because for me, my story is that I got into this when I was super young. I was like 22, 23 years old,
oh, wow.
which is not usually when you get into the business of real estate. Usually right. it's your second or third career. This was pretty much a defaulted, didn't think it was going to be my first and forever career. So I actually, when I started, there was only one place in Manhattan, just I think we should probably tell everybody, by the way, where we actually are physically and where we work. So I'm Manhattan in Brooklyn and you are?
Yes, I'm in Novi, Michigan. So I'm in southeastern Michigan. So Detroit metropolitan area suburbs, but a great deal. 14 years of my career was also in what I say is DMV, the DC, Maryland, and Virginia markets.
Okay, perfect. So I started in Manhattan and there was only one place back in the day when I started that you could actually be a new agent and go to. So the Elements, the Corcorans, the Halsteads did not let you through the door if you were a brand new agent. At that time, I won't say the name of the company, but I started at the only place you could start. And, you know, it was interesting because they insisted we had to go through this new agent boot camp training experience. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of it was at the time, which I thought was crazy then, and I still kind of think it's crazy now, although I get it a little bit more, was neuro-linguistic programming, NLP.
Wow.
Basically how to breathe at the same time as your clients were breathing to create this subconscious level of trust. I'm like, come on. I just want to like
next level.
Sell a property. I can't think about like how to breathe at the same time as my customer, but it was my way into a firm. But the other challenge that I had at that time was, you know, New York is very specific in its neighborhoods and each neighborhood really has its own personality. And I had grown up going to the clubs and kind of living a jet set lifestyle. And so I was very much and still am a downtown Manhattan girl. Mm-hmm. But the only place that they had an opening for was in their Upper East Side office. Now, for any of you who know New York City, that is very much old money, ladies who lunch, Park Avenue, Fifth Avenue type yes. landscape.
Wow.
I was not that. I was 22. I was wearing my limited clothes. I did not have my first Chanel bag yet. That was just not me, but I had to figure it out. And so one of the ways that I started was to be kind of like mentored by some of the older, better fitting for that farm and atmosphere type agents. And I would run their open houses and I would meet people through open houses.
Right.
And I think
right.
this is the way a lot of agents get started.
Sure.
So I resonated much better with the younger people who came through. And again, the younger people on the Upper East Side were usually looking, it was going to be east of Third Avenue. Because once you got to Lexington is when you got into the really high priced properties, but over on the East Side, you could still be a first time buyer and kind of find your place. So I actually started working with the younger buyers in that area and through time built up like a really tiny, like here and there type of buyer situation.
Right.
But I always did right for my buyers. Like you said, I always provided an above and beyond an experience for them. And I was their biggest advocate always and forever. However, I knew the entire time I was not meant to be on the Upper East Side. It was not authentic to who I am and what my lifestyle was and is. And eventually, and again, this goes to talking about what you were talking about before, and we'll talk about a lot throughout our course and these podcasts, is always maintaining a level of professionalism. And early on, I kind of was thrown into the fire with some crazy sellers and some really out there kind of experiences. And one of my co-brokers, the listing agent on the other side of one of my deals, was this lovely lady named Kay Chaucer, who worked for Halsted at the time. And afterwards, she came to me and she said, you know, you were just absolute pleasure to work with. Why are you at firm X? You should be at my firm. And I was like, well, I don't know how to get in there because they wouldn't take people that didn't have enough experience yet. So she said, well, don't worry, I'll introduce you to Diane. And for those of you in the New York area, know that Diane Ramirez was the president of Halsted Property for a very long time. And for me, being 22 something years old at the time, I couldn't believe that I was going to be invited in to meet this very well-known, well-respected woman. And so she hooked me up. I met with Diane. Diane interviewed me and fortunately put me in the Halsted Soho office. And again, for those of you who don't know Manhattan, that is the cool kid version of New York, especially back in the day. And it was such a relief because now I was more in my element. And what I realized is that once you're more in your element, you work with people who are like you or who want to be like you. And so it's easier to bond, create those relationships with people who would legitimately be your friend. It doesn't mean that you can't work with others, but you're much stronger in setting the right, what's the word I'm looking for? Experience, relationship, and all the other good things that come with that with people who are like you.
It's so true. It's interesting that you say that because, and I know that we're going to get into this. Ooh, we're going to take a deep dive into authenticity. But what you just said kind of, it's interesting because it kind of plays against this back in the day that, okay, so you said you go to the Upper East Side. That's not really your soft spot. That's not your jam. You don't feel comfortable there. That's not your authentic self. And yet back in the day, people used to say, you know, fake it till you make it, right? Mm-hmm. So that means go in there and play the game. But you knew even then that that's not where
your
market was going to be. Yeah,
right. I wasn't resonating. I felt off. I also knew I was much younger. I mean, legitimately, this is Barbara Corcoran. I took a class with her once when Barbara Corcoran was still running Corcoran. Mm-hmm. And she referred to me as the baby broker. It was like, oh, Kelly's here. The baby broker's here. And I know she meant it like as a term of endearment, but it pissed me off. I was just like, stop calling me the baby broker. I might be young. I get it. And again, this was a world for, especially for women. I mean, even if we want to go down that road for a second, this is the career that you started when you were in your 40s back then.
Right.
Not so much today. You know, people see this more as I'm going to go right to it. But this was the career for women that after you had your kids, mm-hmm. you know, and you'd sent them to college or just as something to do, to have a little hobby, sell real estate. And so it just wasn't where I was meant to be. And I was the second I was around the people I was supposed to be, my peers, the people that I were hanging out, the people I was meeting in the clubs, the people that I was going to the gym with, then I was able to really kind of take off. And that's long before I even knew kind of how to further identify my authenticity by getting into like niche marketing. This was just being with my peeps, you know what I mean? And seeing them and being able to meet them, say who I was, and also too, be treated legitimately because they were the same age. They didn't say, oh, she's only 23. She probably doesn't know anything about real estate. Whereas when I was trying to do it with, again, the people who have hundreds of millions of dollars and want to buy their $10 million apartment, which today would be a $100 million apartment, I knew that they would look at me like, who is this girl? You know, where'd she come from?
Not to say that, right? Mm-hmm. It's not to say that if you're younger, you can't resonate and have a niche market that might be even a senior's or a second home or a retirement, if that resonates with you, right? It's just about what resonates and what's authentic to you.
Right. And it's about understanding that. It's about understanding not only who you are, but what the perception of you is.
Yes.
So again, if I had been some famous if Rockefeller had been my last name, mm-hmm. it would have been easier for me at 22 to do the neighborhood in that sure. price point that I was first kind of dropped into.
Right.
But I'm not a Rockefeller. Right. So it just
became, sorry about that.
No, I know. It really does kind of but you know, it's okay because real estate allows you to make as much money as you possibly can.
Exactly.
So we all can be Rockefellers in this business.
Exactly. Gosh, this is a great topic. And I have enjoyed talking about this. I know that our courses are going to go even further into this. And I'm looking so forward to digging in. Future podcasts coming up, we're going to talk about some hot topics just like this. And I'm just excited. So this is a great, great kickoff, Kelly.
I mean, I'm happy we finally did it, but I think we also should forewarn people that we kept our swearing to a minimum in this episode, that moving forward, that's probably not how it's going to be. And we're trying to kind of be all proper as much as we can be in this episode, but get ready because we know each other and there are going to be tangents that we go off on, things you're going to want to hear, slams that we need to make about this industry and the things that frustrate us and all that kind of good stuff coming up in future podcasts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So buckle up. Exactly. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
But having said that, if you do have anything that you would like to reach out as a comment or a question that you would like us to answer in future episodes, we invite you to send an email to info@globalgirlscollaboration.com. That's yes. where you can reach us. And we hope that you do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we look forward to, please be sure to subscribe to our podcast and be sure to listen to the upcoming episodes. And we look forward to hearing from you about what you want to hear on upcoming episodes. Until then, this is Dee Dee
and Kelly,
and we will talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye. Hi, it's me again with The Legal Language. This podcast is presented solely for informational and entertainment purposes. We are just your virtual gal pals, and the views, thoughts, opinions, and experiences expressed are our own. We are not attorneys, and this podcast is not intended as a substitute for the advice of a lawyer or any other legal, financial, or qualified professional.